happy Resurrection Day to each of you today. It's good to see you. It's good to see new faces, old faces. I invite you to join me in prayer. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. If you turn around, you can see we got quite a few people on Zoom. So we have a wonderful family joining us today in on this Resurrection Sunday. The resurrection is described by one writer as that moment when time stood still and eternity stepped into history. It's the breaking of dawn, the silence that shattered the earth, trembling beneath our feet, the power of the Almighty on full display, establishing Jesus as Lord and setting the stage. The resurrection sets the stage for every comeback, for every breakthrough, for every victory that you and I will ever know. It's true. If this is true, then this story that we celebrate today is not merely a historical event, but a new reality that breaks into the present, offering a living hope and restoring each of us, individuals, to never giving up on pursuing our God-intended purpose, if the resurrection is true. The resurrection is a divine yes that serves as the ultimate triumph by the Almighty, turning every no of despair, every no of evil, and every no of limitation into a divine yes of victory. It is a lifestyle of living daily in the power of the restoration of life, not just as an annual celebration. It represents the resurrection, the ultimate overcomer. Jesus's victory over the grave bears witness that tyranny, corruption, corrupt systems, hopeless situations do not have the last word. The resurrection symbolizes that moment that changed the ending of every story, turning the cross from a setback to a setup for a step forward. I just said something right there. The women approached the tomb at dawn to complete their burial rituals. They were driven by devotion despite the profound sorrow and the profound shock and likely the fear that they experienced. Their hearts were heavy with the broken hope of the crucifixion. The early timing was both to avoid night's danger and to properly anoint Jesus's body before rigor mortis set in. They demonstrated devotion amidst despair, these women who went to the tomb, despite having witnessed the horror of the death of Jesus on Good Friday. Their love compelled them to perform one final ritual and serve the body of dead Jesus. They tackled the weight of grief. They were likely not expecting to see the resurrection, but rather than focusing on the immediate tragic task of burial, they exemplified by their concern regarding the stone. Who is going to roll away the stone? They came to grips with the shock and the sorrow. The atmosphere was one of deep disappointment as they entered into that space where Jesus was laid into the tomb, having witnessed their hopes of the new kingdom seemingly crushed, with many of them having seen Jesus die. They found courage in the dark, moving before sunrise, braving the early morning, showing intense bravery in the time of danger. Now, Matthew focuses on Mary Magdalene and the other Mary. And the other Gospels mention some additional women like Joanna and Salome. This difference in the account of the resurrection illustrates really the varied but authentic perspective of the witnesses that were present rather than any contradiction, as they all shared in the same profound experience of finding an empty tomb. Why did they come, you might ask, to that empty tomb that first resurrection morning? Based on the scriptures, those who came to the tomb on the resurrection morning came at least for three reasons, all of which represent different responses that you and I may have to grief, or different responses that you and I may have to faith. They came to process their pain. They came to perform final acts of love and remain near to Jesus out of a deep gratitude of devotion. Even when hope seemed lost, they came to the tomb. According to Matthew 28 and 1, some came just to look. You know, the looky-loos. They came to bear witness, perhaps seeking understanding or a place to weep where Jesus had laid, showing that sometimes the first step in grief is just showing up. But not only did they come to look, according to Mark chapter 16 and according to Luke chapter 24, some of them came to labor. They brought spices to prepare the body, performing one final act of devotion, demonstrating that faith often means serving even when the situation appears to be hopeless. Thirdly, John chapter 20, verses 11 to 18 tells us at least one of them came to linger. They came to look, they came to labor, and they came to linger. Mary Magdalene stayed behind out of a deep love and a gratitude for her transformation, providing that those who receive great grace from God will remain close to where hope resides. Mary Magdalene stayed at the cross until everyone had left. She stayed at the cross until the end, and she was the last to leave the place of pain and the first to arrive at the place of hope. Her heart was broken, but she kept coming back. Thank God, thank God, thank God. Maybe you know someone. Thank God for those who worship, those who serve, those who just keep coming back no matter what. It should come as no surprise to any of us gathered here, or even to those who are on Zoom, that the women were the first to arrive at the tomb. The women were the first to come back, because even today, in all of our churches, if it weren't for faithful, praying women, the church door would be closed. Women were the first. God has always used those who sometimes are overlooked, sometimes are underestimated, to share the message of the resurrection. But people weren't the only ones, the only ambassadors that were sent to the tomb that morning. According to scriptures, angels were sent. Angels appeared on the first resurrection Sunday to serve as a celestial witness, proclaiming the news of Jesus's resurrection and validating the empty tomb. They removed the stone to show that the fear of death and the grave was no longer a barrier. Mark chapter 16, verse 1 says that the women, as they made their way to the tomb, they wondered, how would they move the stone? So the angel came and rolled away the stone, removing one of the obstacles in their way. The stone was more than just a rock. The stone, it was a symbol of finality. The stone, it was the period at the end of the sentence. The stone represents the exclamation point that shouts, "It's over." The stone threatened to disrupt the woman's plans, but it could not stop the purpose of the Almighty. With God start, no stone can stop. So the angel rolled away the stone. The angel didn't roll away the stone to let Jesus out, but the angel rolled away the stone to let the people in. The stone was rolled away to declare that the graveyard is no longer a dead end. The stone was rolled away to declare that the cemetery is not the finish line, but the cemetery can be the starting gate. The stone was rolled away to declare that death is not the end. It can be the start of something new. A new life, a new career, a new dream, a new family, a new relationship. The stone declares that Jesus is gone forever. But the stone introduced the epilogue of the story. The stone was trying to provide closure, revealing the fate of Jesus and wrapping up the closed end. That's what the stone represents. So the Almighty sent angels to change the story. The Almighty sent angels to roll away the stone. The angels didn't move the stone for Jesus. The angel moved the stone for you and for me. But the stone wasn't the only barrier. The angel also came to help us deal with those roadblocks of faith, represented by the soldiers and represented by the guards, who stood as walls between the hope of the people. The guards represented walls between the hope of the people. Matthew chapter 26, verse 62, one of the scholars said, this is a metaphysical explosion in a physical world that highlights the vanity of human power attempting to contain divine action. By sealing the tomb and posting guards, the religious leaders acted as gatekeepers. The religious leaders acted as the gatekeepers of the status quo, trying to use their physical force and their physical power to prevent a spiritual reality. And so when the text describes the guards becoming like dead men, it highlights the total collapse of worldly human power when it collides with the Almighty. Preach, Kenneth. I'm trying to do the best I can. The chief priests and the Pharisees, fearing Jesus' prophecy would come true, they secured the tomb. They secured the tomb with a seal of the Roman temple and with guards. And they were intending to prevent the disciples from stealing the body of Jesus. And here we come to this intersection of the physical and the divine. The guards represent the state power. And the text says that they became like men. They fainted. They were terrified when the supernatural occurred, providing handcuffs and guards that cannot incarcerate the truth. Handcuffs and guards cannot incarcerate the truth or divine intervention. And so while the religious leaders were busy financing a conspiracy theory of silence, paying soldiers to spread lies, the women were busy sharing a gospel of presence. While some were buying silence, others were bringing hope. Which one do we bring? A tragedy of an empty tomb is not that Jesus was gone, but that the powers that be attempted to bribe history into believing a lie. And that was more powerful than life. That, we see some of that happening right now, don't we? The guards stood as obstacles to entering the tomb and experiencing the truth of life after death. But the angels appeared and dealt with the soldiers. And there are many examples of this in modern day, many examples of guards that try, of power keeper, power brokers who try to bribe history to believe a lie rather than believe the power of life. Some of them are governments. Some of them are large institutions. Some of them are financing propaganda. Some of them are religious faiths or corporate leaders that focus more on rigid rules or security or protocol rather than transforming lives and people. But the angel didn't just move the stone or silence the guards. The angels also came to remind them of what they already knew. The angel came to remind them of what they knew, but what they had forgotten. So what did the angel remind them of? There are at least three things. The angels reminded them of the past. They were reminded of the crucifixion. Of course, most of these ladies needed no such reminder because they were both at the crucifixion, according to John. So the angels came to remind them of the past, but the angels also came to remind them of the present. In a simple rhetorical question spoken by the angels to the women, the women are reminded of the present. And here is the question. Do you remember the question? Why do you look for the living among the dead? That question means that Jesus is alive and you won't find him in this place where dead people are. The presence of the Almighty cannot be boxed into a tomb, and death has been defeated. And so the resurrection signals a transition. The resurrection signals a shift in perspective. It challenges people like you and me to move from looking back. It challenges us to move from looking in the past, what was, to look into the present of what is. The resurrection is a warning against seeking life, seeking hope, or living things in dead places. The resurrection is a vibration of hope. The angel says, he ain't here. What are you looking for the living in a dead place? He ain't here. That's a word for somebody. Somebody who's looking for life in a dead situation. Someone who's looking for life in a dead business. Someone who's looking for life in a dead relationship. Someone who's looking for life in a dead ritual. Someone who's looking for life in a dead memory. Someone who's looking for life in an addiction that's killing you. He ain't here. He ain't here. Stop searching for the living among the dead. The Almighty is not holding or hiding in our past. The Almighty is not hiding in our disappointment. The Almighty is not hiding in our yesterday failures. But resurrection power is a forward-moving power. Resurrection power is an invitation to stop searching for hope in hopeless places and step into the here and now. Step into the living. The resurrection is not about the past. The resurrection is about today. And so Jesus meets the women on their way and says, greetings. In Greek, it's chariot. Jesus, in essence, says, rejoice. And then Jesus reminds them, thirdly, of the promise. They're reminded of the promise of the resurrection. They had been promised that the resurrection should take place. So this should be no surprise. This shouldn't have caught them off guard. After all, it's what Jesus talked about in Matthew. Matthew chapter 12, Matthew chapter 16, Matthew chapter 17, Matthew chapter 20, Matthew chapter 26, John chapter 2, John chapter 10. Jesus talked about the resurrection. And they should have been holding a sunrise service at 5 a.m. in the morning. Outside the tomb, just waiting for it to happen. And the final thing that Jesus reminded them of is the plan. Jesus reminded them of the plan. The angel reminded them of the plan that they were to go and to share the good news. That Jesus had risen. Jesus had risen from the dead. The plan was that those disciples who were shivering in fear next to the cross might be their own witnesses of this amazing event in history. And finally, Jesus or the disciples were reminded of the proof. These disciples, I'm calling the women disciples because they were actually the first disciples. They were reminded of the proof. The angel invited them to look into the tomb. The angel invited them to see for themselves and confirm that Jesus was actually gone. And later, Peter and John arrived and they record the fact that the linen that Jesus was in was empty and that the napkin that was on his face had been folded. They reminded them of the proof. They reminded them of the proof. The proof that Jesus died on a Roman cross. He was buried in a borrowed tomb. The disciples were devastated and confused. That's the proof. The disciples were afraid. The tomb was found empty 3 days later. His body has never been found. The disciples encountered him alive. And those same men who were hiding in fear because of not knowing if the next cross was be for them, they will become bold witnesses. The proof. And out of the resurrection, the church was born and still is here. But those are just the facts. Those are just the facts. Is faith only about facts? As people of faith, are we not called just, or are we called only to believe the facts or to have faith? 1 Corinthians chapter 15, Paul says, these are the facts, the death, the burial, and the resurrection. But then Paul goes on and he shifts gears and he says, in essence, we've got to get up. I've seen him for myself. So the facts said this, but faith shows this. And that's the difference. That's the difference. That's a move from information to transformation. And that's our challenge today. That's our challenge this weekend. That's our challenge. Not just to shout about the resurrection. That's our challenge. Not just to sing about the resurrection. That's our challenge. Not just to preach or pray about the resurrection. But you know what our challenge is? Our challenge is to live the resurrection. Our challenge is to be compassionate witnesses in a world that is starving for hope. That's our challenge. To live and to serve with compassion, because resurrected people bring life everywhere they go. Okay, will you say that with me? Because that's the end of my sermon. Resurrected people bring life wherever they go. Amen.